Good afternoon. Welcome to Coffee and Conversation, a podcast brought to you by the Del Norte County Office of Education and Del Norte County Unified School District. I'm Jeff Harris, the superintendent of schools for Del Norte County. And in today's podcast, we are going to focus on, you know, I think a topic that doesn't get enough attention in our community and in communities around the state and the country, and that's foster care. And May is National Foster Care Month. And joining me today to talk a little bit about our students who currently receive foster services are Pam Wilder, who's the director of foster and homeless youth here in Del Norte County. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you for having me.
And Melinda Anderson, who works for the Del Norte Child Welfare Department and specifically oversees wraparound services. Welcome, Melinda.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks.
I appreciate you guys coming in. We're about halfway through May, and again, as we kind of focus on National Foster Care Month, and we're in the thick of it right now, I don't know if our folks in throughout the community or even in the region really understand the needs of Del Norte County. You know, when I talk to folks in Sacramento, most of them don't even know where we are. When we start talking about statistics and we talk about how we have maybe 50 or 100 or 200 youth that are served through this program or that program, we get dismissed sometimes because it's not as many as LA or Sacramento or San Francisco or whatever. But when we start talking about percentages, eyes start to pop. And when we start talking about percentages for Del Norte County, we have a significant number of youth who have had adverse childhood experiences or are currently experiencing them. But we've got great folks like you and great families out there that are foster families. So tell us a little bit about, from each of your perspectives, what is kind of the current state of our county and foster care? How many youth do we have that are currently in a foster environment?
Well, I know my numbers with the program here in Del Norte Schools is going to be a little bit higher because we support a wider range of students. Right. We're supporting students that are under the jurisdiction of the court in foster care. They may be with their parents, but the court has jurisdiction. Right. We also support those that are on probation. We support those that are under the jurisdiction of a tribal court, our tribal foster program. And we also support students that may be under the jurisdiction of a court from another county and they're placed here in Del Norte County. So we're supporting a wide range of students, but we're looking, students that are enrolled in Del Norte schools is about 140 students.
I think Pam's numbers are pretty accurate. Offhand, I can think of about anywhere from about 140 to 150 foster youth. So we have kids that are broken up between being younger children that we're trying to get connected with, say, early child interaction and preschool, and then we also have kids that are getting close to graduating high school and even going on to college and vocational schools.
Yeah, we have about 14 students that are what's considered non-minor dependent, those have graduated high school but have opted to stay in as a dependent of the court. So that's not included in my 141 numbers. And then we also have about 30 students that are not school age that are between the ages of 0 and 4 where we're trying to support them to get them into some early childhood experiences.
So again, how many of the youngest?
About 30.
That's a pretty
25 to 30. Yes.
That's a pretty number.
Yeah.
And then for those unfamiliar with the post, like what we call non-minor dependency, that is a program that's unique to California where when we have a foster youth that basically aged out of our system and turned 18, they're allowed to stay in our services until mm-hmm. they turn about 21. And even there's additional services out there that can help them all the way up to 24.
Wow.
That helps them you know, find housing, get connected with colleges and other resources just because these services got established in 2012 because we had such high rates of homeless youth that basically when they turned 18, they were just kicked out of foster care. So the state created what we call AB 12 or extended foster care to really help those targeted youth from just experiencing homelessness and having even greater ACEs scores and just, you know, repeating that cycle.
So that's only been around for about 11 years.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's a very good program.
Yeah.
We've helped a good number of youth just be able to transition successfully into adulthood. And even they can leave the area, we can connect them with resources in the entire state of California.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
What I love about the program is that a lot of times, you know, even for kids that are turning 18 and they're not connected to foster, they want to just get the heck out of here, right? So, you know, but our foster youth, they don't want anything to do with the system. They want to have that choice and that control, and they choose to leave the system. But sometimes they get out in the real world and they realize, oh, I do need help.
Right.
They can come back anytime through 24, I think it is, and ask for help, and they can come back to the program. They can leave, they can come back again as many times as they need to be able to get their needs met.
And you know, I think that's pretty incredible, because I didn't know that until you both just said it. But I think that's a pretty incredible thing, because we're talking about student youth who have really struggled. They've been through this removal from a family. They've been placed into the foster system because of a variety of issues. But they also haven't had that really good, solid, healthy kind of role model. And so I think sometimes, Pam, you hit the nail on the head. I think sometimes it's that gut reaction of, I'm done, I'm out. But then as maybe they get a little bit older, they get a taste of other things that are out there, that ability to come back in is huge. So let's go back and let's talk a little bit, though, about what services are offered to youth in Del Norte County through what both of you do, through both what's going on in the schools and the broader wraparound services. What does that look like for that 0 to 18, or that preschool to high school?
You want to go first, Pam?
Well, sure. So what we're doing is we're making sure that we're helping to identify barriers to education, mm-hmm. and then we're helping to eliminate or at least minimize those barriers. That's the ultimate overarching theme and goal for us, is to make sure that they get that quality education that they deserve.
So talk a little bit about what maybe one or two of the most common barriers that you see, Pam. I know we've talked about some, but just give a couple of examples.
It could be as something as school supplies, making sure that they have those school supplies, up to emergency Chromebooks. If a school doesn't have one available just yet and it's a new student in care, mm-hmm. we can offer a temporary one, or a graphing calculator, or things like that, or a hotspot if mm-hmm. they're in a space that doesn't have internet. But it can also be up to referrals to services, or at least connecting with our community partners to make sure that our kiddos are on their radar for support services, whether it's behavioral health, Remy Vista, or things like that.
Okay.
The child welfare likes to focus on trying to connect services to the individual youth. So it's really based on the child's needs, the family's needs. If there are concerns about, say, a child that is removed from their parents' home and they cannot go back to they're moved to a different part of the area, mm-hmm. we usually will connect with Pam and her services to make sure that kid can stay in their school of origin, because what, you know, statistics are showing us is that every time a child is moved from their home or even their school, it's like a 6-month setback for them emotionally, educationally, socially, everything like that. We also have a wide variety of, you know, tribal connecting children to both their community and also even their, you know, natural family connections. That's a big focus that with the state and our county is specifically doing in ensuring that children, when they're removed from the care of their family, that they're able to still have that natural support in their mm-hmm. biological family or extended family members. Our county is actually one of the first counties in the state that is going to be taking a very proactive approach to what we call family finding and placing children with their relatives and supporting those connections and supporting that placement to make sure that child's successful.
So, Melinda, is that because we're actually small enough to do it, or is it because we've got some very proactive people in our county, or both?
It's both. So what a lot of research has been showing us is that children have greater success rates in both their goals and reunification with their parents or their caregiver, and also in the event they can't return home, that they have greater what we call permanency success rates. Mm-hmm. So when children are placed with their biological relatives or extended family members, even extended, say, family friends, children have a greater sense of belonging when they have that connection. And so when those behaviors emerge years later, when, say, adoptions or guardianships are finalized and the department is no longer involved, it allows kids to still have that connection because of just that kinship.
Right.
So the state has noticed this trend and really wants to support that. And our county also notices the trend of that, of ensuring a child's success is making sure that they're connected to their community, to their family, to their, you know, the world that's around them.
So, you know, Pam, so talking about kind of the school stability and those kind of things, what are some of the other services that you and the folks that you work with provide to ensure that when a child is at school, they don't have that 6-month fallback, right? Because, and that's for a child who is removed from a home. And I've been in situations where we've seen kids that have left school and maybe moved from parent to grandparent to aunt to uncle, maybe 4 or 5 times in a year, yeah, right?
It's sad.
And at that point, given that, I know it's a broad statistic, but given that statistic of losing 6 months, they've completely reset the entire year. So what are some supports that your department provides?
Well, what we do when a student is in foster care and in our foster program, they're afforded certain educational rights. Mm-hmm. So they have the right to remain in their school of origin, no matter where they might be placed. Now, that's a little bit easier in Del Norte County because we are a single district county,
right,
but other counties have multiple districts. And so that really comes into play there. But we do make sure that they have that right to remain in their school of origin. We help coordinate transportation to make sure that they can get to that school where they feel like Melinda's talking about that connection.
Right.
That's really what it is we want to make sure we are not severing that connection where they feel safe, they feel wanted, and they feel happy. There's so much going on around them. Let's make sure we give them some stability.
Well, they have friends.
Yes, absolutely.
They may be seeing the counselor.
Yep.
They know the principal. And I'm thinking about some of our schools, you know, like where maybe there has to be a interdistrict transfer, right, to go to that school, and they don't have to go through that. They can actually keep that placement in that school.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yes, absolutely. But we also help advocate for our youth, or if they're old enough, we're helping them to advocate for themselves. Let's say they have they're in special education, or they're just having some trouble, and mm-hmm. we need to have a school team meeting. We're attending that meeting, and we're helping to make sure that either our voice or their voice is heard to make sure that their wants and needs are taken into consideration.
Huge life skills.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. So let me ask you this. So when we think about, and again, how many students in foster care at this point?
Enrolled in Del Norte schools, yeah. 140 approximately.
So 140 kids. And Melinda, from your perspective, out of those 140 kids, how many are placed currently in foster homes?
I want to say about anywhere from 90 to 100. We have a lot of kids currently out of home right now.
Out of home. So are there need for foster families?
Yes, we desperately need foster families. I mean, I think that everyone has the greatest intentions when they open up their home to our foster youth. But I think that there's a caveat that you really want to ensure or recognize that when you become a foster parent, mm-hmm. you're not taking a child that doesn't have a high ACE score. And for those that are unfamiliar, you know, ACE is our adverse childhood experiences. These children don't come into the homes without, you know, the proverbial baggage. Mm-hmm. And I always, when I used to do training for foster parents, I used to give the analogy that if, like I'm a mother of 4 children, mm-hmm. if something was to, God forbid, happen to me or my husband, my children would be sad, but they had recognized throughout their life that there's been caring and consistent adults, mm-hmm. and we've built those kind of resiliency inside of them and that support system inside of them that they could function. A lot of times these children, when they come into homes, that trauma, even if it was 6 months ago, a year ago, it's still much very there.
Right.
They sometimes will hoard food for years because of just, they went at a point in their life that they didn't have food. So it's
right.
still very much, that trauma is still there, and even years later. So it's really just recognizing that we need very caring and consistent adults that are really going to go with that traumatic, that trauma-informed approach
right.
of meeting the children where they're at, and then making sure that they're open to, you know, whatever services the child's going to need.
And like you said, I think that people really need to focus on that part, because we get a lot of folks that look at it for very altruistic reasons, right? They want to help. They want to be part of making a life better for a child. But when that child comes with abuse, neglect, food insecurity, massive other trauma, you know, that we won't get into, but we all see. And some of it's absolutely horrific. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we just hear some of the most
heart-wrenching
yeah. stories. I mean, just, yeah. It does play a big part. And sometimes, when they're going through the system, it brings out other needs, right? And I mean, a lot of times some of our kids will have most of them, I think, have court-appointed special advocates. So what role does CASA play? Because, you know, we had Christine Sledi on mm-hmm. a while back talking about her role, but how does CASA fit into foster? Because this is an entire system of support for kids.
I think that child welfare right now, and we have the greatest intentions, we have the greatest desire to help families, mm-hmm. but our system is a broken system, because our social workers are very dedicated, very caring, mm-hmm. and hard workers, but their caseloads are usually anywhere from the high 20s to middle 30s, and there's just so many youth out there that need that care, that need that consistency, and they are bound by what we call our welfare institution code regulations of mm-hmm. this is what the recommendation is, this is the time frame. CASA is kind of, in a sense, a needed person for our system to function, because they become the child's voice. You know, if child welfare says our recommendation is going to be to, say, terminate the services because the parents haven't made the targeted progress, CASA can say, hey, I know that's your guys' stance because of the law and your guidelines, but this child wants to return home. I think we need to advocate for what this child wants. It's a very, I think it's a very important relationship and a very important aspect to child welfare and their functionality.
I'd love to jump in there because CASA has a very special place in my heart. I spent quite a few years there helping to train our advocates. And what I always said is social workers have to live in a very black and white world because they have to function within those welfare and institution code. But a CASA advocate gets to live in the gray area. They get to write a report to the judge just like the social workers do, but they get to show the heart and soul of things. And so they get to broaden that picture for the judge to be able to make a fully informed decision for this child and for this family.
So, again, an important component, right, in supporting kids. So, believe it or not, we're almost at the end of our time. Yeah, it goes fast. And I think there's so much more that we could talk about how students are supported, about the systems, the other structures that we have within our community that can help students who are receiving foster care or who have been in foster placement, along with, Pam, you'd mentioned at the very beginning, all the other students who may not be in foster care per se, but who are served by schools.
Right.
Just any last thoughts before we go?
I always like to leave it with one of the, there's a quote that I heard about when it comes to like that consistent adult, is that every child is one consistent caring adult away from being either a success or statistic. If not everyone has to be a foster parent or a CASA, you can reach out to foster youth and help them in a wide variety of ways, whether it is working in the classroom and being there for that youth, becoming a foster parent, a CASA, or even, you know, figuring out a way to advocate for more support for our families in general. And that's going to be the greatest thing we can do, is to really be there for our youth.
That's a pretty powerful statement. One caring adult away from being a success or a statistic. Pam?
I don't even know how I can follow that. I absolutely love that what Melinda just said, and I just second the motion.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to explore being a foster parent or a mm-hmm. foster family, how would they reach out?
they would just need to contact our office, which is 707-464-3191, and they would ask to speak to our resource family approval unit. I believe it's Heather Friedrich. I'm going to give her extension right now. She'll be very excited. It's 2722.
Okay. And CASA, they can contact CASA Del Norte.
Yeah, CASA 707-464-3320.
And then Pam, if somebody said, you know what, I would just like to make a donation or I'd like to help. And I know we've had folks reach out before to provide tutoring for youth or to provide additional materials and supplies. How could they get a hold of you?
If they wanted to get a hold of me, they can call 707-464-0722.
Or you can always call 464-6141 and we can get you in touch with Pam.
Absolutely.
So, again, I really want to thank both of you for giving your time to come in to talk about this. May is National Foster Care Month. And again, we have a relatively small number compared to the state, but a relatively large percentage of our youth experiencing the need for foster care. So again, a snapshot into our community, but like Melinda said, it only takes one caring adult to turn around a life, and hopefully that's you. So Pam, Melinda, thank you very much.
Thank you.